It's a pleasure now to welcome Jason Brown, along with Madeline Dinnerstein from Carnegie Science Center.
Good morning.
Good to see you both.
Hi.
Hi. Jason, talk a little bit about what you do at Carnegie Science Center.
So as Director of Science and Education, I oversee most of our education-facing programs. So we have student programs, as most people know, that focus on STEM careers, STEM competitions, and STEM opportunities for students in the region. But we also have teacher programs, and we have programs for school districts as a whole. So what we're really trying to do is provide support to families, students, educators, and the community as a whole to get them interested in STEM, teach really what STEM is, and give them hands-on opportunities to practice it and develop those dispositions that Pittsburgh's workforce really needs in the future.
Now, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And you may have known that already, but maybe you hear that term bandied about. And if your job is in education, you're very familiar with it. But from a general sense, you may not be. Why were those areas so important to focus on?
Well, there's a little misunderstanding about STEM, really. A lot of people tend to think that STEM only takes place in those classrooms, so in the science classroom or in the math classroom, or that STEM is just about taking more science classes or more math classes. And in reality, what STEM is, STEM education is about interactive, interdisciplinary education that gives students the opportunity to do science or to become problem solvers, become critical thinkers, be creative, be artistic, be collaborative, work in teams. So it doesn't have to have anything to do with science, technology, engineering, or math. It's about becoming a thinker. It's about becoming a problem solver. It's about becoming someone who can be dropped into any situation and think their way out of it. So when we talk about STEM careers, we're largely talking about industries that require science and math backgrounds or technology backgrounds or engineering backgrounds. But STEM education is about giving them skills to be successful in those careers, regardless of what they are.
A lot of people, too, add an A for STEAM to talk even more about, and that would be the arts, to talk more about integration. And we talk about this a lot here, the notion of project-based learning or how learning can be everywhere. When we teach people about broadcasting in our workshops, there's different ways we can do it, and one way includes talking about decibels and attenuation and about how many megabytes you need if you're recording at a certain rate of megabytes per second. There's all sorts of ways to work principles of science or technology, but also just to look at creative ways to solve problems.
Absolutely, and that's why STEM or STEAM, you'll hear stream. I've heard hamster. That's my favorite.
What's hamster stand for?
Well, it depends on how many M's and how many R's you put into it, because it can be humanities, arts, math, science, technology, engineering, reading. I've heard religion mixed in with that.
Wow.
So it can be anything, but sooner or later it becomes school. So that's why it doesn't matter whether you say STEM or whether you say steam or whether you say stream or whether you say hamster or STEM C or STEM whatever. It doesn't matter, because we're talking about that interdisciplinary approach that includes all of those things. And I can't imagine there's anyone who would argue that to be successful in something like architecture or radio or any one of a million careers, it doesn't require some sort of artistic ability, creative ability. And those are certainly built in the humanities classes, the arts classes, music. So it takes everything, and you can become a STEM learner in any classroom.
It's really a dramatic shift in the way people can learn, adults as well as kids. And Carnegie Science Center has been at the forefront of this kind of thinking for a while. Let's talk a bit about STEMosphere.
Sure.
I know from the past, if you go to stemisphere.org, stemisphere.org, there's all sorts of resources there to do things.
There are. We have currently about 1,800 resources on STEMosphere, and
wow,
it changes. It's ongoing. It changes constantly. So things time out because things pass. For example, we have a lot of summer camps on there now. And it's not just resources related to Carnegie Science Center. It's resources for the entire region. It's actually resources that are growing even beyond the southwestern Pennsylvania region to incorporate the entire Commonwealth. It's national resources, so there are national lesson plans. There are activities for makerspaces. There are everything is about hands-on and about helping those helping kids to develop those opportunities and skills. So, for example, you can be general. If you're looking for a summer camp, you can just go on and browse through all the summer camps. But if you have a 13-year-old daughter who is interested in robotics, you can also filter them in a way where you can really narrow your search and find exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah. If you say we're looking for something related to cooking and how you would demonstrate some of the principles of thinking and experimenting in the kitchen, you could enter some keywords and search and find some examples. In fact, I'll do that while you're while you're talking here.
Well, as I'm a sourdough bread maker, and so it's amazing how much science goes into sourdough. So I constantly make it differently and try different things to see how to get the best bread. But a big piece of that is the scientific investigation, and I'd like to say that I am more scientific about it and that I am keeping track of exact amounts of all the ingredients that I put in and tracking the chemical reactions, but I'm really not. It's kind of we'll see what happens when it comes out of the oven, and if I like it, I try and remember what I did and reproduce it. But you're absolutely right that there are – that these STEM and science learning opportunities are everywhere, and that's what STEMisphere is really doing. It's trying to connect people with – things that they may not think of as STEM or opportunities to learn in a way that they may not have thought of. So if you're a grandparent and you've got your grandchildren coming to visit this summer for a week or two and you're looking for something to keep them stimulated and interested and excited but also keep the learning going, STEMisphere is a great place to look for things like that. So there's a lot of family opportunities, but there are also things on there for educators and for the community in general.
One of the ones I just got is kitchen chemistry, and it's for grades 2 and 3. It's happening in late June, and join your fellow scientists as we use everyday ingredients to conduct experiments and learn the science explaining them, taught by Jennifer Lang at Carnegie Mellon. So that's an example of something you can find by looking. And I know I've looked in the past for interest areas of my own. It's really amazing. Madeline, you have had a chance to really look through the resources too, right?
Yeah.
And do you find lots of people asking questions or wanting to get either to submit materials or, you know, trying to use it? A big part of Madeline's role is being at it's kind of the epicenter of all the information requests that probably come in.
Right. I am trying to raise the profile of a STEMisphere, make sure more people know about it because it is such a great resource. But it's also important that people know about it so that if they're running a STEM education program, that they can share it. And it's free to list your program. And when you go to the website, it's a very easy thing to add the information. And the goal is right now we have about 1,800 resources, and we just want that number to keep growing and growing and growing. And it can be a local program. It can be a state program. It can be a regional program. It can be a national program. We're just trying to make as many resources available to people as we can.
So if you're homeschooling your kids, and if you need some additional ideas in curriculum or things to try, you can go to STEMisphere and find tips there. Could be additional classes to take or just ideas to try on your own. There's certainly quite a collection of things.
Sure. And in fact, we have another initiative called the Carnegie STEM Excellence Pathway, which is a strategic planning process to support schools as they try and develop more robust, comprehensive STEM programs. So STEMisphere also, that's where the pathway lives, is on STEMisphere. And Pathway is currently being used in over 500 districts nationally, so 23 states and the District of Columbia. So we're trying to build resources also to support those teachers who are trying to improve the STEM education in their region. So by having as many resources as possible, especially community-based resources, it can help them to capitalize on what's already in their region to help support them.
Now, you mentioned jobs earlier. And by the way, if you're just joining us, Jason Brown is here, Director of Education at Carnegie Science Center.
Science and Education.
At Carnegie Science Center. And Madeline Dinnerstein, whose title I should know and I don't.
I'm one of the marketing managers.
One of the marketing folks. They're here from Carnegie Science Center. We're talking about STEMosphere and also STEM in general and the idea of thinking creatively and from a problem-solving approach. You mentioned jobs earlier. Most jobs, you know, there's going to be a lot of automation coming up, a lot of processes that are going to be done by machines rather than people, but people are going to need to be available to think and create, design, solve problems. And that's one of the reasons why I suspect you're so passionate about this, because for people to have robust jobs that they can really have careers, these kinds of skills are important.
Absolutely. And I can speak from experience. I was a teacher when I first graduated from college, but I've also been a business owner. I've been a carpenter. I was a construction project manager. I was a field engineer, and now I'm at the Science Center. So I have this very unusual background, but I feel like I was able to be successful in those things because of those having those STEM skills. A friend of mine, Jim, when we were kids, we would always take what we had learned in high school, and then we would try it out on when we got home in some kind of fun, hands-on way. So we would, well, I really shouldn't talk about the specific things we did, but we would try chemical reactions to get explosive reactions at in his backyard and things like that. But that's why STEM really came alive for me, was through those interactions. And I feel like STEM provides people the opportunity to be successful no matter what they do, because there's these foundational skills that you have to have in any job. You have to be able to see a problem in front of you and then identify it. And that creativity and artistic aspect comes back in too, because think about all the things you see every day in your life. And you say, wow, that's amazing. What an incredible invention that is. That took someone's imagination to first visualize that and then figure out how to make it operate. And so, yes, they need to have an understanding of science. They need to have an understanding of how it works, mathematics, how technology works. But at the end of the day, it's really about dreaming things up and then figuring out how to make them happen. So the thing about STEM too and the STEM jobs is many people think of STEM as just engineering. So I want to be an engineer, and that's STEM. But in fact, over 50% of the available STEM jobs don't require a four-year degree. So STEM really provides opportunity and promise for non-traditional learners, for hands-on learners. I was someone who learned by doing stuff. So, and I like being a builder, and I like doing things hands-on and experientially. So for all the kids out there who maybe don't love sitting in a classroom but love doing things, that's STEM. So going and making something and fixing your parents' vacuum cleaner because it's broken, or all of those different pieces, that is STEM, and that is why it's such a great opportunity, because it really levels the playing field. Kids who aren't successful in a classroom or are less successful in a classroom can be put in a hands-on experience, and they are often the leaders.
And what's interesting too, I think, is if you approach education and learning in this way, your mind, it actually becomes second nature when it comes time to solve problems creatively and to try to figure out solutions to things. And probably one of the personal examples I can give is somebody trained formally in engineering and also with a degree in public policy. But engineering in particular, there's a certain skill in the back of my head, and you don't necessarily need to have that training, and I'm talking about 30 some years ago now, but as a result of that training, there's a lot of problems I'll look at and see in a very different way than other people might see them. And it's not necessarily that I'm seeing the right way or the wrong way. It's just a different way of looking at things. And it's because of all these years of those kinds of classes and approaches that I had to take, including a lot of laboratory experiments and things. So I think it just is a good way to bring people together that have mm-hmm. different points of view and ideas of how to solve things.
And it's very liberating, too, to have that – to feel empowered in that way, to feel like you can solve your own problems and not necessarily have to pick up a phone and the first reaction isn't, oh, who am I going to call to fix this? It's, I wonder what's wrong. I wonder what I can – what I might do to fix that first. And so you're absolutely right. It's very empowering, and it really does also bring – it brings different ideas together.
You're reminding me of fixing our air conditioner the other day. I got a big, great feeling out of doing it. Our air conditioner at home stopped working. Took a little internet research, but I found out, maybe you already know this, an air conditioner has a big fan that blows. This is a whole house air conditioner that moves the hot air out. The fan had stopped turning. I figured I needed to get a new motor. Well, there's a little capacitor in there that stores energy that gives the fan a little boost. And that capacitor apparently wasn't charged. All I had to do was give the fan a boost myself with a piece of technology called a stick that I stuck in, and I moved the fan around. And it was kind of like in the old days when you would see people start a car by cranking the engine in the front with a little knob, or when a plane would get started by mm-hmm. somebody physically turning the propellers on the front. And suddenly the house was cool, and I ended up not having to call a repair person because the capacitor charged as a result of my stick method. No fingers were harmed during the approach. But it was great to be able to think of that, because I immediately was ready to take the whole thing apart and test every part and just go through a totally different approach. And it was by reading and thinking and hearing what other people thought that led me to being able to solve that.
And what you were really doing was applying the scientific method, right? So yeah. you were looking at data, and you were identifying the problem, and then you were trying to figure out what it was and what's the evidence, and then what's ultimately devising an experiment to test your solution. And so it's funny how, you know, the scientific method is always held out as something that you have to do consciously. But in reality, what you're describing, I think, and what you were describing earlier, you reach this point where it just kind of happens in the background.
Yeah, it you're exactly right. It becomes second nature. We just have about a minute left. I can't believe how fast things have gone. So stemisphere.org is the best place to go, I would think, to learn more. Is there anything else you would like to add in our remaining moments?
One thing I'd like to add is that Stemisphere exists and is useful because people submit resources. So we would ask that if you know of a great STEM resource that's out there, and I hope that this conversation has helped to expand your idea about what STEM resources means, but if you have an idea of STEM resources that are out there, all you have to do is go on Stemisphere and click the Submit a Resource button, and everything's vetted by our Stemisphere team before it's put up, but we don't know everything that's out there. A lot of what we know is because people like the listeners here have put them on there. So I would ask that you please submit resources, because we want to know about your programs. But not only do we want to know, we want to make sure that other people are connected to them also. It'll help your programs, it'll help our community, and it'll help the future of all these people out there.
Jason Brown and Madeline Dinnerstein from Carnegie Science Center. Madeline, anything else you'd like to mention?
No, I think you guys have done a great job. Hang on, let me get it.
carnegiecenter.org is where you can get additional
details. Everything.
Well, thank you. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
carnegiecenter.org and stemisphere.org is where you can get additional details.